leaving the trackers and Manx to do all the dirty work. The ballroom looked even worse than it had when we'd left it. Someone had lit lanterns around the edges of the room so we could at least see better than before. Willa ran over when she saw me and threw her arms around me. I hugged her back, feeling tremendous relief that she was alive. Despite a few scrapes and bruises, she looked okay. She then launched into an excited tale about how she had blown a few vitrae out of the ceiling, and I told her I was proud. I wanted to listen to her talk, but the destruction was too overwhelming. When Alora saw us, she pulled Aurora from where she was helping a bleeding man. I noted with dark satisfaction that the Chancellor had a nasty cut on his forehead, and I hoped that Aurora couldn't make time to fix him. Alora didn't look any worse for the wear. If I hadn't known, I never would have thought she'd been here when the fight was going on. Aurora, on the other hand, though she still looked beautiful and regal, did show signs of the battle. Her dress was torn, her hair was a mess, and there was blood all over her hands and arms, though I doubted most of it was hers. Princess! Alora looked genuinely relieved when she walked over to us, delicately stepping over broken tables and a vitrae corpse. I'm glad to see you're all right. I was very worried about you.
Yeah, I'm fine.
She reached out and touched my cheek, but there was nothing affectionate about it. It was the way I would touch a strange animal that I'd been assured was safe, though I didn't really believe it. I don't know what I would have done if something happened to you. She smiled wanly at me, then dropped her hand and looked at Finn. I'm sure a thank you is in order for saving my daughter.
No need,
Finn replied rather curtly, and Alora gazed at him intently for a moment, saying something in his mind. Then she turned and walked away, apparently to deal with something far more pressing than her daughter. Aurora squeezed Tuve's arms and looked at him warmly, making me feel a horrible pang at my own mother's reaction. Aurora had seemed like an ice queen too, but she could at least show signs of genuine happiness that her son hadn't died. The moment passed quickly, and she moved on to me. She tore the hole in my dress wider so she could put her hand on my wound, and I gritted my teeth at the pain. Finn tightened his arm around my shoulders. A warm, tingling sensation passed over my side, and moments later, the pain stopped.
Good as new.
Aurora smiled tiredly at me. She seemed to have aged since before she'd touched me, and I wondered how much all that healing took out of her. She started to step away, going back to help other people, and Finn leaned on me, clearly in pain.
What about Finn?
I asked, and she looked back at me, startled. Apparently, I had asked something wrong, and she didn't know how to react.
No, I'm fine.
Finn waved her off.
Nonsense.
Tuve clapped him on the back and nodded at his mother.
Finn saved the day. He deserves a little help. Aurora, want to take care of him?
She looked uncertainly at her son, then nodded and walked over to Finn.
Of course,
Aurora said. She looked him over for wounds, trying to pinpoint what needed fixing. I glanced away from them, and I saw Rhys sitting on the edge of a table. He held a bloody cloth to his forehead and stared down at the floor.
Rhys!
I shouted, and when he looked up and saw me, he smiled.
Go see him,
Finn suggested. Aurora poked at something painful in his side, and he winced.
She's taking care of me.
I got him.
Tuve took Finn's arm so he would be leaning on Tuve instead of me. I looked back at Finn, but he nodded at me to go, clearly trying not to let on how much pain Aurora was causing him. I really didn't want to leave Finn, but I felt like I should at least say hi to somebody who tried to save my life, especially since Rhys had been the only person all night who had told me I looked beautiful without sounding really creepy about it.
You're alive,
Rhys grinned. He tried to stand up, but I gestured for him to sit back down.
I wasn't sure what happened to you.
He looked past me at Finn and his expression faltered.
I didn't know Finn was back. If I had, I wouldn't have worried.
I was worried about you. I reached out and carefully touched his forehead. You took quite the punch there.
Yeah, but I couldn't get one in, Reese grumbled, looking down at the floor. And I couldn't stop him from taking you.
Yes, you did, I insisted. If you hadn't been there, they would have hauled me off before anybody had a chance to do anything about it. You kind of saved the day.
Yeah?
His blue eyes were hopeful when he looked at me. Definitely. I smiled back at him.
You know, back in the day when a guy saved a princess's life, she would reward him with a kiss, Reese commented.
His smile was light, but his eyes were serious. If Finn hadn't been standing a few feet behind me, watching, I probably would have kissed him. But I didn't want to do anything to spoil having Finn back. So I just shook my head and smiled.
Maybe when I slay the dragon, then I'll get a kiss.
I promise, I agreed. Would you settle for a hug?
A hug from you is never settling.
I leaned over and hugged him tightly. A woman sitting nearby looked aghast at the new princess openly hugging a Mainskleeg. Things were really going to have to change when I was queen. After Aurora patched up Finn, she suggested we both get some rest. The room was still a disaster, but Tuve insisted that he and his mother were taking care of everything. I wanted to protest and help more, but I was exhausted, so I didn't put up a fight. Using his abilities during the fight had focused Tuve. His entire personality shone through, and he took control of the situation with ease. I had a feeling that for the first time I was seeing the real Tuve, and not the kid trapped behind the noise of his powers. In a sense, we worked in opposite ways. I projected intensely, which was why my persuasion was strong, whereas Tuve received everything. He could pick up on my emotions and thoughts whether he wanted to or not. But I imagine that he sensed other people too, and his mind had to be a fog of everyone's emotions. Finn went with me to my room, just in case it wasn't completely safe. Before we even reached the stairs, Finn had taken my hand in his. Most of the way, I was silent. But when we got close to my door, I felt like I had to say something.
So, are you and Tuve, like, pals or something?
I was teasing, but I was curious. I had never really seen them even speak before, but there seemed to be a kind of familiarity between them.
I'm a tracker, Finn answered. I track Tuve. He's a good kid.
He looked over at me, smiling a little.
I told him to keep an eye on you.
If you were so worried about me, why didn't you stay in the palace? I asked, more sharply than I meant to. Finn shook his head.
Let's not talk about that now.
We had stopped in front of my bedroom door, and there was a playful glimmer in his dark eyes. What should we talk about then? I looked up at him.
How beautiful you look in that dress.
Finn looked me over appreciatively, and he put his hands on my sides. I laughed, and then he was pushing me against the door. His body was so tight against me I could barely breathe, and his mouth searched for mine. He kissed me in the same frantic way he had before, and I loved it. I wrapped my arms around him and pushed myself against him eagerly. He reached around me, opening the door, and we tumbled into my room. He caught me before I actually fell, then lifted me easily into his arms and carried me. Gently, he tossed me onto the bed and then lowered himself on top of me. His stubble tickled my neck and shoulders as he covered me in kisses. Sitting back, he peeled off his jacket and hoodie, and I expected him to take off his t-shirt, but he stopped, looking down at me. His black hair was slightly disheveled, but his expression was completely foreign to me. He just stared at me, making my skin redden with shame.
What?
You're just so perfect,
Finn said, but he sounded distressed about it. Oh, I am not, I blushed and laughed. You know I'm not.
You can't see what I see.
He leaned over me again, his face right above mine, but not kissing me. After a minute's hesitation, he kissed my forehead and my cheeks, and then, very tenderly, kissed my lips.
I just don't want to disturb you.
How are you going to disturb me?
A
smile played on his lips, and then he sat up, climbing off me.
You should go change into pajamas. That dress can't be comfortable.
What do I need pajamas for? I sat up. I tried to sound flirty, but I knew there was a panicked edge to my voice. As soon as we'd come in here, I thought things were going to go much further than pajamas would allow.
I'll stay with you tonight,
Finn tried to reassure me.
But nothing more can happen except for sleep.
Why?
I'm here.
Finn looked at me intently.
Isn't that enough?
I nodded and carefully climbed off of the bed. I stood in front of him so he could unzip my dress, enjoying the way his hands lingered on my skin. I didn't understand what was going on, but I would be happy for anything I could have with him. I went into the bathroom and changed into my pajamas, then came back and climbed into bed. He continued sitting on the edge for a minute. Then, almost reluctantly, he came over to me. I curled up in his arms, burying my head in his chest, and he held me tightly to him. Nothing had ever felt better than being with him like that, and I tried to stay awake so I could relish every minute. But eventually, my body gave in, and I passed out. In the morning, I woke up to Allura coming in my room for the first time ever. She was wearing pants, something I had never seen her in. I was still curled up in Finn's arms, and she didn't seem surprised or offended by that. I trust you slept well. Allura looked around the room, but not in a nervous way. She had just never been here before. And I trust that Finn was a gentleman. He always is, I yawned. He had started pulling away from me and getting out of the bed. I furrowed my brow, but didn't say anything. It wasn't that shocking that she'd be upset that we were together, so I didn't think much of it when Finn started to gather up his jacket and sweatshirt. Thank you for protecting my daughter, Allura said without looking at him. Finn paused at the doorway to look back at me, his dark eyes conflicted. He nodded, then turned and walked out of my room, shutting the door behind him. Well, you took that much better than I thought you would, I admitted, sitting up. He's not coming back. What? I stared at the door in dismay. He saved your life, so I gave him last night to say goodbye to you, Allura explained. I will be transferring him out of here as soon as possible. You mean he knew? I gaped at her. Yes, I made the agreement with him last night, Allura said. He had known and hadn't let me in on it, and hadn't tried to steal me away. But he saved my life, I insisted, feeling a terrifying pain growing in my chest. It screamed that I couldn't possibly survive without Finn. He should be here to protect me. He is emotionally compromised and unsuitable for the job, Allura explained flatly. Not only that, if he stayed around, you would be banished from Forevening. He doesn't want that, and neither do I, she sighed. I shouldn't have even given him last night, but I don't want to know what you did with him. Don't tell me, don't tell anyone. Is that clear? Nothing happened, I shook my head. But I want him back. He'll protect me better than anyone. Let me put it to you this way. He will do anything to keep you alive, princess. Allura looked at me evenly. That means he would die to save you, without hesitation.
Do you really want that? Do you really want him to die because of you?
No,
I trailed off, looking dazedly at my blankets. I knew she was right. Last night he had almost died to save me. If Tuve hadn't come out onto the balcony, he would be dead.
Very well. It's in his best interest that he's not around you either,
Allura said.
Now, you need to get up and get ready. We have much to go over.
Chapter 24. Goodbye. The next few days were an endless stream of defense meetings. There had never been an attack on Fort Eatning this severe. The body count was well into the double digits, including several visiting Higher Royal Trill. Any loss of powerful Trill was devastating for the kingdom. Allura and Aurora led all the meetings, while Tuve and I sat quietly in the back. He was the most powerful and should have had more of a say, but he didn't seem that interested. The 20 or so other people who always seemed to be in attendance offered advice that was completely pointless. Tuve just said that our best defense was to get our abilities under control. Willa took this advice to heart and busied herself with self-defense classes and getting a better control of her wind ability. Allura barely spoke to me and never uttered a kind word. The one positive was that I'd been spared the christening ceremony, and Allura decided to allow me to keep my own name. I wandered around in a fog. I didn't care whether I lived or died. If they attacked again, I would deal with whatever happened.
You're gonna have to snap out of this one day, Rhys said.
I lay in my bed, staring at the ceiling, while he leaned against the doorway. He still had a nasty cut above his eyebrow, since Aurora wouldn't resort to healing a Manx. The wound was slowly getting better, but it pained me to see it. It was just a reminder that he had gotten hurt for me. Maybe. I didn't feel like I ever would, and I hoped I wouldn't.
Aw, come on, Rhys sighed and came over to sit on the bed next to me. I know that everything that's happened has really taken its toll on you, but it's not the end of the world.
I never said it was, I muttered. I just hate this house. I hate my mother. I hate being a princess. I hate everything about being here.
Even me? Rhys asked.
No, of course not you, I shook my head. You're about the only thing I like anymore.
I feel privileged.
He smiled at me, but when I didn't smile back, his quickly faded.
Look, I hate it here too. It's a hard place to live in, especially this house with Allura. But what else are we gonna do? Where else can we go?
That's when it occurred to me. I absolutely did not want this life, and this life truly didn't want Rhys. He had grown up surrounded by a cold indifference that made his childhood even worse than my own, and he deserved so much more. Since I had been here, Rhys had been one of the few people to show me genuine kindness, and he deserved that in return. I didn't particularly care whether I lived or died, so I didn't need protection, should anyone decide to come after me again, but I wasn't so sure they would anymore. Tuve had explained that the Vitrae numbers had been damaged, and another attack anytime soon would be highly unlikely. But somewhere out there, I knew that my brother Matt was worried sick about me. He and Maggie would welcome me back with open arms, and they would be delighted to have Rhys. I didn't know how I would explain him to them, but I'd figure something out. I was not a princess, and I didn't want to be one. It would feel so good to be home again. That wouldn't really fix the Finn thing, but Matt and Maggie would know the best way to mend a broken heart. Rhys wasn't convinced that leaving was the best thing for me, pointing to the cut on his eye from when he'd been unable to protect me or himself. Reluctantly, I resorted to using my persuasion. But I didn't really have another choice. Besides, I was only convincing him that he didn't need to worry about me. In the middle of the night, I decided to act.
I gathered Reese and we snuck out of the palace, which was more difficult than I'd expected. Guards and other Trill walked the grounds in case of another Vitrei attack. Even though they thought another one would be unlikely, they weren't taking any chances. Reese and I went through the kitchen and out the back door to the secret garden that bloomed even in the middle of the night. Scaling the high brick walls that surrounded the palace compound would have been impossible if I didn't have Reese to give me a boost. Once I pulled him up, we both jumped down on the other side. Without even brushing the dirt from our clothes, we ran along the wall. Reese led the way because he knew the area better than I did. We'd nearly made it to the garage when we had to duck behind a bush to wait for a guard to pass. Once the guard moved on, we hurried to the garage. Reese found his new motorcycle but didn't start it. He pushed it out of the garage, leaving the engine and lights off so as not to attract attention. At the edge of town was the gate manned by a guard, and I doubted he'd let the princess through. Reese had a plan, though. He knew of a weak spot in the fence a ways down the embankment. He'd heard of other Manx getting through it when they ran away. I had to help Reese steady the motorcycle so it wouldn't go tumbling down the hill as we made our way through the trees and the brush. Apparently, the hole in the fence was even larger now than it had been before. That's how some of the Vitrei had broken in, and the Trill hadn't fixed it yet. Typical of them, to be more focused on securing the palace than making sure the town of Fort-Eatning was safe. We were able to get the motorcycle through without much trouble, and it was then, as we pushed it up the hill, that I started feeling the exhilaration and relief of escape. I ignored any pangs of sadness or longing for some of the people I'd met here, like Willa and Tuve, and I just tried to focus on the fact that I was getting away. I was free. Once we got to the road, Reese started the motorcycle. We sped off into the darkness, and I sat on the bike behind him, wrapping my arms tightly around his waist and burying my face in his leather jacket. The sky had that eerie blue glow of very early morning when we pulled up in front of my house. Reese hadn't even turned off the motorcycle before Matt threw open the front door and came jogging down the porch steps. Even in the dim light, I could see how stricken Matt looked. I jumped off the bike, and completely oblivious to Reese, Matt threw his arms around me. He held me so tightly to him, it hurt. I didn't care, though. I buried my face in his shoulder, breathing in his familiar scent and relishing the protection of his arms. I was finally home. The Vitrei Attacks, A Trill Story. Chapter 1. Loki leaned back in the seat, his head against the headrest. It was too damn early for this kind of thing. But the only way he'd convince Jen and Kira to let him wait in the SUV was because he'd sold himself as the getaway driver. If they came back, hauling that girl along as a prisoner, and Loki wasn't alert enough to speed off, he'd be in serious trouble. Not with Jen or Kira, since he outclassed them, but Jen wouldn't hesitate to tell the king about any of Loki's shortcomings. So he waited in the car, listening to the Hugo album on his iPod. He'd been lucky, he thought, to bring it along. The SUV they'd stolen only had rap in it, and Loki had tossed the entire CD collection out the window as soon as he'd gotten in. A few miles from the Vitrei Palace, the car the king had given him had died. That was just par for the course lately. Loki had been forced to steal the SUV to keep them on track, because the king wouldn't allow for a missed deadline. He wanted the girl, and he wanted her now. Loki had busted out the passenger side window, and Kira had tacked up his black jacket to keep the wind out. It didn't do much to keep in sound, though, so Loki kept the music low enough so as not to wake the neighborhood. The clock on the dashboard said it was after 5 in the morning, and Loki glanced over his shoulder, back toward the girl's house. He'd parked almost a block away and across the street, so he was actually at a horrible angle to observe her. But that was just as well, since he didn't want to watch her. He wanted no part of the stakeout. The sky was beginning to lighten, looking more blue than black now. Loki couldn't see where Jen and Kira were hiding. He didn't know how they did it. He wouldn't have been able to stand sitting out there all night, crouched down in the cold grass, waiting to kidnap some stupid girl. Jen lived for that sort of thing. It was the thrill of the hunt that got him going. But Loki had never been into it. The one thing in his life he'd always been grateful for was that he'd never been a tracker. It seemed solitary and tedious. But more than that, he hated the idea of tricking people into coming back to the Vitrae Palace, to being forced to live a life like this. They would be so much better off in the human world, away from the king's iron fist and the totalitarian troll society. Loki had fought as hard as he could to get out of participating in this abduction. The king was always looking for a reason to kill him, and if Loki refused an order like this, that would be reason enough. Sitting in the SUV, it occurred to Loki that he could escape. He'd thought of escape almost incessantly since the day he was born. But it had never felt so possible. He was alone in the car. He could just drive off, leaving Jen and Kira behind to deal with the mess. But the same problems always stopped him. Where would he go? What would he do? The king might track him down and kill him, just because he could. And even if he didn't, Loki didn't have anybody on the outside. He'd always believed in fighting for the things he loved, but he'd never found anything he loved enough to escape for. For now, he didn't really see any other options. He'd have to wait and do what the king said. From outside the car came a noise that sounded like shouting, but he didn't think Jen and Kira would be stupid enough to draw attention to themselves. They knew how important this girl was to the king, to the Vitrae as a whole, and they wouldn't mess it up. He leaned back in the seat, closing his eyes and humming along with, "Hurt makes it beautiful."
"Go!" Kira shouted as she yanked open the passenger door.
"What?"
Loki sat up and turned to the back seat to see Jen hopping in, alone.
"Where's the girl?"
"Just go!"
Jen snarled.
"Seriously?"
Loki rolled his eyes, but did as he was told. He started the car, and when he didn't speed up fast enough, Kira pushed her hand on his leg, forcing his foot to press harder on the gas.
"Easy there,"
Loki told her.
"Just because the king is going to kill you two doesn't mean we all need to die now."
She let up, and Loki turned a corner just in time to see the police cars with their flashing lights approaching.
"Hey, you're in this as much as we are,"
Jen snapped. Loki glanced in the rearview mirror at him. Jen's eyes were black, and every time Loki looked at him, he was afraid that Jen saw into his soul and stole a bit of it.
"If anything, you're in worse, Loki," Kira said. "The king put you in charge."
"Yes, he did, but I delegated to you two,"
Loki gestured between Kira and Jen.
"You both promised me you had this in the bag. It's one girl who has no idea how to harness her powers. How could she possibly have eluded you?"
"Finn took her,"
Kira said through clenched teeth. "She's probably on her way to the Trill Palace as we speak."
"I'll kill that bastard if it's the last thing I do,"
Jen muttered.
"Finn?"
Loki shook his head, not understanding what they were talking about.
"What is that?"
"He's a Trill tracker," Kira explained. "But he's the best they have."
"You know him?"
Loki raised an eyebrow.
"I didn't realize you socialized with the Trill."
Kira shot him a glare and said,
"We've run into him before.
He's tried to stop us from getting other changelings." "But he's just a tracker?"
Loki asked, watching her from the corner of his eye.
"He's not just anything," Kira insisted. "He's strong and a really good fighter."
"So? You should have been able to crush him like a bug,"
Loki said.
"That's what the king will say, and he's right."
"There's no reason why a damn Trill tracker should ever get the upper hand in a fight." "I'm sure you could have taken him, but you weren't there,"
Kira pointed out. Jen crossed his arms and grinned with smug satisfaction.
And that's what we'll tell the king.
Oh, really? Loki looked at Jen in the rearview mirror again. You'll tell the king that you're weak and useless and you need me to do your job for you?
Jen's smile faltered.
I don't need anybody.
That's what you just said,
Loki countered, his own smile growing.
Just admit it. Admit that I'm stronger and better than you, and I'll take the fall for this, Jen.
Screw you, Loki.
Jen narrowed his dead eyes at him, and Loki couldn't help but laugh at his displeasure.
When the king executes you, and he will, I will spit on your grave.
You've been on her for 3 weeks, Jen. Loki dropped his playful tone, and his words were hard.
3 weeks, and you haven't done anything.
The king sent me in to finish the job you barely even started, and I let you take the lead out of respect for your position.
Oh, bullshit!
Jen interrupted him. He leaned forward in the seat so he could yell more directly at Loki.
You were lazy and didn't want to do any of this. You let me do it because you don't want to get your hands dirty.
Oh, I'm sorry that I don't get my jollies by kidnapping young girls,
Loki snapped back.
You realize the king is either going to torture her the way he has the rest of us, or kill her? You're bringing her back to get slaughtered.
Who cares?
Jen leaned back in the seat.
She's not my problem, and she's not yours either.
Since when do you have a conscience anyway? Kira asked.
I don't.
Loki paused, thinking of why he didn't want to be a part of this.
I've just never been one to advocate murder.
Well, it's her or us, Kira shrugged. If I have a job to do, I'm going to do it.
You mean except for this job, which you completely ruined, and now we'll all die horrible, painful deaths?
Loki asked. Jen kicked the back of Loki's seat, and Loki slammed on the brakes, causing Jen to lurch forward, hitting his head on the seat.
Dick!
Jen hit Loki in the back of the head, and Loki turned around to fight back.
Guys!
Kira yelled, grabbing Loki's arm to keep him from hitting Jen.
Knock it off!
We have real problems here, and you two fighting won't help anything.
Nothing's going to help,
Loki said grimly.
Nothing we can say will make the king go easy on us.
Chapter 2.
It's all Loki's fault,
Jen said as soon as they'd reached the king's chambers, and Loki rolled his eyes and sighed loudly.
It is not all my fault, Loki said dryly. I had nothing to do with their failure.
On the long ride back to the Vitrei Palace in Ondarika, Loki, Jen, and Kira had gone over their stories, deciding what exactly they meant to tell the king. Even though they all agreed that no matter what they said, the king would be royally pissed, the right excuse could mean the difference between torture and execution. They'd finally agreed on something that sounded plausible and would almost get them off the hook. They could tell the king that the Trill had gotten a jump on them. By the time they arrived to kidnap the girl, the Trill were already running off with her. All of that completely went out the window, though, as Loki had known it would. Jen was only out for himself, which was how he'd made it that far in the Vitrei army. The king seemed to respect backstabbing.
He did nothing,
Jen insisted.
That's the problem.
The king had his back to them, his long red velvet jacket flowing down to the floor. His dark hair went down almost to his waist, and while he was a rather slight man, his presence was so imposing, even Loki found it hard not to cower around him at times. Kira had curtsied when they came in, and she hadn't bothered to fully straighten up. Jen had his arms folded behind his back and stood rigid, like a soldier, while Loki had his arms folded over his chest. Other than the three of them and the king, the only other person in the room was Sarah, the queen. She sat in one of the chairs, her small Pomeranian, Frode, on her lap. But neither of them had made a sound. They all waited with bated breath for the king's response. His chambers had high ceilings, but the dark mahogany walls made it feel smaller. There were no windows, so every time Loki went in to see the king, he always felt vaguely claustrophobic. The room was sparsely furnished, too, with only a large desk and a few red high-back chairs. One wall was covered with floor-to-ceiling bookcases, and most of them were on Vitre and troll history. But he had a few other choice titles. Once, when Loki had been left alone in the chambers, he'd gone over to inspect them. He'd found a copy of Mein Kampf, as well as a book that had graphic pictures of precisely how to inflict the worst torture and how to fillet living people.
"Is that true, Loki?"
the king asked, his voice booming like gravel and thunder through the room.
"That I did nothing?"
Loki shook his head.
"No, sire, of course not. I led the team, but I delegated..." "He waited in the car while we went after her,"
Jen interrupted with an unpleasant whine in his voice.
"He did nothing while the Trill took her away."
Loki looked over at Jen, his caramel eyes hard.
"Yes, I waited in the car, but I told you to call for me if you needed me."
He was nearly spitting out the words as he spoke.
"And you never called, not even when you let a lone tracker run off with her." "We didn't let him do anything,"
Jen shouted.
"And if you were there, you could have helped fight him off." "But you said you didn't need me,"
Loki countered.
"You didn't even want the king to let me go along with you. You insisted you could handle this without me, so I gave you the benefit of the doubt."
"Did I send you along to give them the benefit of the doubt?"
the king asked, finally turning around to face them for the first time.
"No," Loki lowered his eyes. "But I was right there in the car. I thought they could handle a simple stakeout."
"But I told you they couldn't."
The king stepped closer to Loki, his dark eyes locked on him.
"I told you they were incompetent and incapable of handling this. And while you aren't much better than either of them, you are stronger. Not to mention that mind trick of yours."
"I know, but I didn't think they would let her get away."
Loki dared to look up at the king and gesture to Jen and Kira standing beside him.
"I mean, there's two of them, and one stupid girl. I didn't think they could screw things up that badly."
"But I did."
The king stood right in front of Loki, his eyes burning into him.
"And I told you to fix it." "Did you fix it?"
Loki swallowed hard.
"No, sire, I did not."
The king nodded once. He turned, as if he meant to start walking away, but instead he flew back at Loki, smacking him so hard across the face that Loki saw white for a minute and fell to the ground. Sarah gasped, but said nothing. After years of this, she'd learned there was nothing she could do to prevent the king from taking out his anger on Loki. Loki lay on the floor, rubbing his jaw. For a moment, he'd been certain the king had shattered his jaw. Not that that would be the first time the king had shattered one of his bones. But even though he hadn't, that didn't mean it felt good. Jen started chuckling, laughing at Loki's pain, but the king stopped him.
"Get out!"
the king roared, turning to Jen and Kira.
"Get out before I do the same to you!"
They hurried out, muttering their apologies as they did, and slammed the heavy oak door behind them. He was still in pain, but Loki could get up, though he chose not to. Staying on the floor was safer. Getting to his feet would just give the king an excuse to knock him back down again.
"This will be the last time you fail me,"
the king growled.
"I've given you everything, and you've let me down far too many times. You're just a lazy brat prince."
"I'm not the prince,"
Loki corrected him quietly.
"And you never will be,"
the king shouted, like it was some kind of threat. Loki rolled onto his back and sighed.
"I don't want to be," Good, because you're never going to be anything.
The king swore under his breath, then walked over and kicked Loki in the side. Loki balled himself up, wrapping his arms around his stomach. For a moment, he couldn't breathe or move or do anything other than feel the searing pain running through him.
Orin!
Sarah gasped. Her hand clutched the arm of her chair, but she didn't get to her feet. The king shook his hands at her in exasperation, as if he didn't know what to do anymore.
I'm using restraint, my love,
the king said, and Sarah could hear it in his voice. He repressed his urge to yell, and he kept his words even.
I want his head on a platter.
He gestured to where Loki lay writhing in pain.
But it's not. He's alive. Out of respect for you and for his title. But he won't be for much longer if he keeps failing me.
I know.
Sarah stood up and set the dog on the chair behind her. And I thank you for that, my king. She walked toward her husband, keeping her tone soothing. I understand how frustrated you are and how badly you want the princess. You know how much I want her, too. The king let out a deep breath and seemed to soften a bit, or as much as the king could soften.
I know,
he nodded.
I do sometimes forget how much the princess would mean to you, too.
Perhaps your anger at Loki is a tad misplaced, Sarah said.
When the king opened his mouth to argue, she held up her hand.
Not at him. He has let you down. But perhaps it could be better directed at the Trill, and not at your own people.
What are you proposing?
The king narrowed his eyes at her. Nothing that you haven't proposed already, my love. She put her hands on his chest and smiled up at him. You said you would stop at nothing to get her, and all is not lost yet. She's with the Trill, but you've waged wars on them before. This will be no different. The king nodded, considering what his wife said.
Loki!
The king barked without looking back at him.
Gather all the best trackers we have, all of our powerful vitrae. We'll launch an attack on the Trill.
Loki got to his feet, still holding his side. He stretched his jaw, which throbbed dully, and cracked his neck.
Even the hobgoblin sire?
Loki asked.
No, not yet.
The king shook his head.
We'll hold them back until we absolutely have to use them.
Chapter 3 Loki stood in the back of the room while the king went over his plan for the attack on the Trill Palace in Foreatning with the army he'd assembled. The king had launched attacks on the Trill before, some of them quite successful, and there was no reason for him to think this one wouldn't go the same way. This wasn't his last measure, though. Sarah had convinced him to hold a few things back, namely himself and Loki. The queen thought sending them into that kind of danger was unnecessary. Orin and Loki were the two most powerful vitrae they had. But the army that the king had mounted should be sufficient to take down the Trill. The Trill had grown weak and complacent in recent years, which was part of the reason the king felt such contempt for them. So the king wouldn't give the attack all he had. He didn't think he would need to. He knew enough of Trill society to know that the girls' coming out ball would be soon. And he had spies in neighbor camps that could tell him exactly when it would be. The king could go after her before that, when security was more lax at the Trill Palace. But he wanted to make a big show of it. He wanted all the trolls from every tribe to know exactly how powerful he was. So he planned the attack for that night, even though there would be far more Trill guards on duty. After the meeting ended, the king went out with his vitrae army to work them on a few training exercises. Since Loki wouldn't be going on the mission, he stayed behind, leaning against a bookcase in the back of the king's chambers.
How are you holding up?
Sarah asked when it was only the two of them in the room.
Oh, you know, as well as I always do after a good beating.
Loki smirked at her, and she pursed her lips. She walked over to him and put her hand on his side, meaning to heal him from where the king had kicked him. But Loki squirmed away from her touch.
Loki, I know how strong the king is. Better than anyone, Sarah said.
Over the years, he'd seen her with her fair share of bruises, probably even more than Loki himself had earned from the hands of the king. He glanced over at her, but quickly looked away.
I'm fine, he insisted, even though he wasn't.
You should let me heal you.
She stepped closer to him, but he just moved away.
You might have a ruptured organ or a broken rib. Why won't you let me help you?
Because, he sighed and ran a hand through his sandy hair. I deserve it.
Loki, you can't mean that. You know you don't deserve it. Orin lashes out over everything. You can't take it to heart.
But I should have helped them, he said quietly. Jen and Kira. Orin told me to. He said they couldn't handle it, and I knew it. But I didn't help them enough. I knew that she would get away.
You couldn't have known that, Sarah said, trying to reassure him.
No, I did. He paused. I even hoped for it.
Sarah's jaw dropped and her eyes widened.
Loki!
Oh, come on, Sarah!
Loki looked at her, exasperated.
I know how much you want that girl, but what good will it do bringing her here? Do you really think it will make your life better? Or the king's?
We'll both be happier, Sarah said.
But she lowered her eyes.
Everything's better when the king is happy.
Loki laughed darkly.
You really think she'll make him happy?
I've lived under the service of the king my entire life, and in 23 years, I've never seen him happy. Nothing makes him happy.
You don't understand. Sarah shook her head and stepped away from him.
And I can't believe you'd purposely let her get away.
Why is that so hard to believe? Loki asked. The king will treat her the same way he does you or me, and you know it. For once, I wanted to see somebody get away. I wanted somebody to escape from the trap you and I are stuck in.
Sarah kept walking away from Loki, the train of her long red gown dragging on the floor behind her. Her black hair had been pulled back in a severe ponytail, the way she usually wore it. She did everything she could to seem as strong and imposing as her husband, but there was something soft and frail about her. Sometimes Loki was surprised that the king had not broken her. But when she looked back at him, her brown eyes swimming with tears, Loki realized that he had. Physically, she may have looked the same, but inside, Sarah wasn't the same woman he'd met 14 years ago.
You don't understand, she said emphatically. The princess will change things, and not just for me, for all of us. She has that power.
Sarah. Loki sighed and stepped over to her. He put his hands on her bare arms, and she stared up at him, her lips quivering.
You've been trying to change things since you married Orin, and I've been trying to for as long as I can remember.
But nothing we do makes anything better. He's never going to relinquish his power. And one girl isn't going to change anything for us. Maybe you've given up, but I haven't.
She wiped at her eyes and pulled away from him.
I will never stop believing that we can be better.
I'm not, he trailed off.
Never mind. But I don't understand. If you think you did the right thing letting her get away, then why did you say you deserved what Orin did to you?
Because of all that mess out there.
Loki motioned vaguely to the door, through which they could hear the grunts and groans from the soldiers.
They're going to war over her. People will get hurt, some even killed.
and I could have just brought her back and avoided this whole thing.
Yes, you could have, Sarah snapped. You don't ever think anything through.
He groaned and flopped into one of the king's chairs. I don't need a lecture, Sarah. You're not my mother.
Your mother was a good woman, and she'd give you a lecture much worse than this one, Sarah shot back. You have to stop being so rash. The things you do have consequences. I was trying to do the right thing.
You thought letting her get away would be the right thing? Sarah asked dubiously.
Kind of, yeah, he admitted.
Sarah rubbed her forehead as if talking to him gave her a headache.
You're so foolish sometimes. I don't want to hear it, Sarah shouted suddenly and held her hand up to him. You let her get away, and that's unforgivable.
Loki didn't say anything. Her voice trembled with hurt, and he couldn't take that away. Swallowing hard, he stared down at his lap and let her finish.
This attack on the Trill should work, Sarah said. But if it doesn't, you will do whatever the king asks of you to bring her back.
No, that's not enough.
You will do anything and everything you need to do, even if that means going above and beyond the king's orders.
Because so help me, Loki. If you let her get away again, I will not stand in the way of his wrath upon you. She took a deep breath.
Do you understand me?
Yes, he said quietly, still looking down.
Loki, Sarah snapped. Do you understand me?
Yes. He lifted his head, and he could see the conviction in her eyes. She would let the king kill him if he didn't bring back the princess.
Good.
She smoothed back her hair and looked away from him.
Now get yourself together. They could use you for their training exercises.
Loki did as he was told, too afraid to argue with her. The bizarre part was that he'd told her the truth because he thought she'd understand. He thought she'd agree with him that he'd done the right thing by letting the princess escape from all this. But Sarah was too blinded by her own needs. With no allies, Loki had no choice. If the king didn't get the girl with this attack, then Loki would have to get her later.
Chapter 4.
We should have heard from them by now, Sarah said, pacing the king's chambers with Frode at her heels.
It's a long drive to Fort Eatning,
the king told her, his gritty voice doing its best to come across as soothing.
Give them time to attack. The coming out ball only started a few hours ago.
Loki sat behind the king's desk, flipping through a book of Vitrae lullabies. All of them were surprisingly disturbing, usually involving a disobedient infant being dragged off by hobgoblins or rival tribes to be eaten or turned into a slave. He found the one his mother used to sing to him, and it was the least horrific of them all. It still involved a human turning into a bird to try to steal a Vitrae baby, but at least the baby lived in the end. In reality, he'd rather be anywhere but in these chambers, waiting to see how the battle turned out, if they got the princess. But both the king and queen had commanded him to wait with them, and the whole time the king sat stoically in his chair while Sarah paced. The tension in the room was exhausting, and the book of lullabies wasn't distracting enough. He thought about getting the book on torture, because that would definitely take his mind off things. But he didn't want to see all the horrible acts the king would eventually do to him someday.
What if they don't get her? Sarah asked, turning to her husband. She wrung her hands, and her smooth skin was uncharacteristically ashen.
They'll get her,
Orin replied, staring past her at the doors to his chambers.
But if they don't?
Sarah sounded as if she might cry, and Loki looked up from his book.
Orin, this might be our last chance to ever get her.
It's not like they're going to kill her, Loki tried to reassure her. Even if we don't get her today, the Trill won't hurt her. They'll just hold her for safekeeping. So you've got nothing to worry about. The king motioned to him.
Loki's right, for once.
Sarah nodded, but she didn't look convinced. She returned to her pacing, with Frode practically tripping over the train of her gown. Loki went back to reading the lullabies, but he didn't get much farther in the book when they heard a commotion in the hall. Footsteps running, and then the door to the chambers was thrown open. When Kira burst into the room, Loki stood up. She looked positively horrid. Her short hair had been singed. Dirt and blood stained her skin and clothing, except for two streaks down her cheeks that were clean from her tears.
We couldn't get her,
Kira's voice trembled, and she shook her head.
They overpowered us. They killed Jen.
They killed Jen? Loki asked, surprised. He'd never cared for the guy, but Loki'd always thought he was a fairly good tracker.
They're much stronger than we thought, Kira continued. Where is she?
Sarah asked, as if she hadn't heard anything Kira had said.
Where's the princess? She's still in Fore'etning.
Kira glanced nervously at the king, afraid of when he might strike her down.
She's fine, but they still have her.
How many casualties did we have?
The king asked, so far sounding unfazed.
I don't know, Kira admitted. A lot.
The king stood up, folding his hands behind him.
Very well, then. We'll have to do something more drastic to get her.
He smiled, and Kira cringed, finding that more frightening than his frown.
We'll do whatever it takes,
the king went on.
But I assure you, Wendy will belong to us.
This has been an Audible Inc. production of Switched, written by Amanda Hawking, narrated by Therese Plummer. Executive producer, Jennifer Basick. Producer, Mike Charsick. Music by Michael Whalen. Copyright 2010 by Amanda Hawking. Production copyright 2011 by Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.